Buddhism as an Educational System, a talk delivered by Venerable Master Jin Gong, Taipei, 1989. Chapter 1, The Author's Own Experience with Buddhism. When I was a young student in Nanjing, I did not believe in any religion. I went to church with some classmates to learn about Christianity. I tried to understand it, but could not find a way to accept it. My favorite religion at that time was Islam, because its emphasis was on moral principles and ethics, and I thought this was rare among the religions. When I came in contact with Buddhism back then, the monks were not very convincing. Therefore, I could not accept Buddhism at all. And it was the one I resisted the most. I was too young at that time and had not met a true practitioner. After I arrived in Taiwan, I was able to hear of Mr. Dong Mei Fong, a famous philosopher and a professor at the National Taiwan University. I became an admirer of his and wrote him a letter asking about taking a class from him at the university. Mr. Fong was only in his 40s at that time, and he invited me to his house. He told me, "Nowadays in school, professors don't act like professors, and students don't act like students either. If you come to the university and expect to learn something, you will be sorely disappointed." When I heard this, I was pretty upset, since he had basically poured cold water over my plans. Finally, he told me, "Well, why don't you come to my house every Sunday, and I'll give you personal instruction for 2 hours. I could not believe that he was so compassionate towards me. I learned about philosophies at Mr. Fong's small table in his little living room, one-on-one. This was extremely precious to me. He introduced the philosophies of the West, China, India, and finally, the philosophy of Buddhism. He taught me that Buddhism is the pinnacle of the world's philosophy, and that it provides the greatest enjoyment for humankind. What he told me was very fascinating. I then realized that Buddhism contains something magnificent. I started to visit the temples in Taipei. However, the monks I met in those temples just could not explain Buddhism to me clearly, especially to an intellectual and a skeptic like me. Of course, the monks are much better in articulating Buddhism today. Then, I set my first sight on San Dao Shi, which was a large temple in Taipei with a vast collection of sutras. Back then, the wide publication and circulation of Buddhist books was very rare. The monks at San Dao Shi were extremely kind to me, as they let me take home many of the precious and rare sutras. This was a great help to me. Soon after, I started to learn the Dharma seriously. I had the auspicious occasion to come in contact with Master Zhang Jia. He was a well-accomplished practitioner who taught and guided me in my Dharma studies. Just like Mr. Fong, he gave me 2 hours every week for 3 years, until he passed away. I then went to Taichung to follow Mr. Bing Nong Li and started studying and practicing with him. Dharma is a special kind of knowledge, and it is not a religion. In order to derive real benefit from the Dharma, we have to understand the true nature of Buddhism. I have the utmost respect for the Dharma, and I believe Buddha Shakyamuni to be the foremost educator in the history of the world. He was just like Confucius, in that he taught everyone tirelessly and without discrimination. Thank you. Chapter 2, The Cause of Our Chaotic World. Today's societies in Taiwan and elsewhere in the world are rather abnormal, a phenomenon that has not been witnessed before either in the West or the East. Some Westerners have prophesied that the end of the world will occur in 1999, and that Christ will come back to earth to judge human beings. Easterners have also predicted impending disasters that are similar to those predictions in the West, the only difference being the time frame to be 20 years later. Some of these predictions are ancient prophecies, and we surely cannot take them too seriously. However, we do have to conclude that this world is really in danger if we view our environment objectively. Environmental pollution is a serious problem, and now people in the whole world finally understand the need for protecting the environment. However, the mental or spiritual pollution problem is many times more serious than the pollution of the environment. This is the source of worldly ills which not many people realize. The Chinese have a saying, to build a nation, to train its governors and its people, education is most essential. For centuries, the Chinese have always believed in the primacy of education, which is considered the foundation for a peaceful and prosperous society. It provides the solution to a myriad of social ills and points the way to turn people's suffering into happiness. Education has a strong impact on the nation and its people. Moreover, the elementary school is the foundation, the basic building block in an educational system. Chapter 3, Buddhism as an Education. Buddhism officially came to China in the Han Dynasty, around 67 AD. The emperor sent special envoys to India to invite Buddhist monks to come to China to teach Buddhism, which was an educational system and not a religion. Regretfully, about 200 years ago, the practice of Buddhism took on a more religious facade. Therefore, the purpose of this talk is to correct this misunderstanding by leading us back to Buddhism as taught by Buddha Shakyamuni. Buddhism is Buddha's education system, which is similar to the education system of Confucius. Both give support to similar viewpoints and methods. The goal of Buddhist education is to attain wisdom. In Sanskrit, the Buddhist wisdom is called Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, which means the perfect ultimate wisdom. Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, teaches us that the main objective of our practice or cultivation is to achieve this ultimate wisdom. Buddha told us that everyone has the potential to realize this state of ultimate wisdom because It is an intrinsic part of our nature and not something one obtains externally. However, most of us have become confused through general misconceptions and therefore are not able to realize this potential. So if you become unconfused, you will realize this intrinsic part of our nature. We can conclude that Buddhism is an educational system aimed at regaining our own intrinsic nature. In addition, Dharma also teaches absolute equality, which stemmed from Buddha's recognition that all sentient beings have Buddha's innate wisdom and nature, and therefore there is no inherent difference between beings. Everyone is different now because people have lost their true nature and have become confused. The degree of wisdom exhibited by individuals depends on the degree of delusion and has nothing to do with the true nature of the individual. Buddhism helps us to realize that innate, perfect, ultimate wisdom. With wisdom, we can then solve all of our problems and turn suffering into happiness. Because of our lack of wisdom, we perceive, view, and behave foolishly, and therefore suffer the consequences evoked by our incorrect actions. If we have wisdom, our thoughts, viewpoints, and behavior will be correct. How then can we be suffering when there are no ill consequences to suffer from? Of course we will be happy. Therefore, suffering is caused by delusion, and the source of happiness is our own realization of wisdom. Buddha's teaching contains three major points: discipline, meditation, and wisdom. Wisdom is the goal, and deep meditation is the process without which one cannot realize wisdom. Discipline, mainly precepts, is the method that helps one to achieve deep meditation. Wisdom will then be realized naturally. Buddha's entire teachings, as conveyed in the sutras, never really depart from these three points. Buddhism encompasses the entire collection of works by Buddha Shakyamuni. This is called the Tripitaka and can be classified into three categories: sutra, vinaya, and sastras, which emphasize meditation, discipline or precepts, and wisdom respectively. Buddha's educational system is based on filial piety, as is the Chinese culture. Before Buddhism came to China, filial piety was the pillar of society and was supported by the wise men of ancient China. When the Buddhist monks came from India to China and started to discuss the Dharma with government officials, it was immediately apparent to everyone that Buddhism shared numerous similarities with the indigenous Confucian traditions. Because of this, the government embraced them and requested that the monks stay in China permanently. The first two who came to China were named Motan and Jufarlin, and they were received by the Hong Lu Shu, the equivalent of a foreign ministry. Shu designated a ministry of the government. The chief of the Hong Lu Shu was equivalent to a foreign minister or secretary of state. However, Hong Lu Shu could only receive foreign guests temporarily. In order to allow them to stay permanently, the emperor added another ministry, Bai Ma Shu, which was in charge of Buddhist education, The term shi now denotes a temple in contemporary Chinese. Originally, shi had nothing to do with a temple, but merely denoted a ministry of the imperial court. Consequently, there were two ministries in charge of education. Li Bu, under the prime minister, was in charge of the traditional Confucian educational system. This organization served basically the same function until the Qing dynasty. Due to the fact that the Bai Ma Shi had been given enormous support from the emperor, Buddhist education rapidly spread throughout China, and in many instances far exceeded the efforts to educate people in the traditional educational system of the Li Bu. Consequently, there may not have been a Confucian school in every village back then, but there was a Shi everywhere. Again, the Buddhist Shi was an educational institution and did not perform religious ceremonies at all, unlike what takes place in contemporary temples nowadays. Another important mission for the original Shi was sutra translation. The scale of the translation effort is hard to imagine today. During the Tang Dynasty, the famous monk Xuanzang supervised 600 scholars in sutra translation. Earlier, monk Kumaraja also had about 400 scholars in his translation team. Therefore, the Shi was a large governmental organization. During the middle of the Qing Dynasty, the Shi was completely transformed into a place to deal with superstitions and spirits, and the educational characteristics totally disappeared. This is truly regretful. Today, there are four types of Buddhism being practiced. First, there is the religious Buddhism, which can be witnessed in temples throughout Taiwan. However, this does not represent the real Buddhism. Second, there is the academic Buddhism taught in many universities today, where we see Buddhism being treated purely as an academic pursuit, especially in Japan. This is not Buddha's education either. Third, and the most unfortunate, is the total degeneration of Buddhism into a cult. This third type of Buddhism is much more damaging to the general public than the first two types. Finally, there is the traditional Buddhism, the teaching of the Dharma, which is very rare in our day and age. Chapter 4, The Methodology and Symbolism of the Buddhist Educational System. The continuing education system for teachers was first established by Buddha Shakyamuni. Many of his students were well accomplished under his instructions. Every year, these students were assigned to teach at different places for 9 months. In India, the rainy season runs from the middle of April to the middle of July. Since it was not convenient to travel and teach during those 3 months, all the students would come back to meet with Buddha to receive additional teachings and learn from each other in class discussions. These 3 months were called the summer retreat. This parallels what we today call continuing education for teachers. The modern continuing education system is pretty much necessitated by the advancement in technology. However, 2,500 years ago, Buddha had already adopted this idea in bringing his students back for additional teachings. This was truly a wonderful idea. Next, Buddhist teaching is full of artistic expressions. Buddhist education was a combination of today's museum and school system. Therefore, the Shi combined the traditional school, library, and museum. In ancient China, the traditional school system was not universal. Most students went to a Shi to study because it usually had a complete collection of books, similar to today's library. The collections included not only sutras, but almost every kind of publication. The monks were familiar with Buddhism, Confucianism, Taoism, and ancient Chinese texts. They were capable of answering questions and well-versed on various subjects. Consequently, Buddhist institutions back then took over the educational mission for the country. The typical Buddhist buildings are expressions of art, which are called expressions of Dharma. The many Buddha and Bodhisattva statues do not, however, represent polytheism. Each statue illustrates a beatified image in human form to convey a happy feeling in everyone's heart. In addition, each statue is a representation of a certain aspect of the Dharma. Thus, the presence of the statues reminds the practitioners of the particular topic of teaching. For example, Guanyin Bodhisattva, the most popular Bodhisattva in China, represents infinite compassion and the application of that compassion in dealing with the world, its people, and surroundings. This is different from the second type of Buddhism mentioned before. Nowadays, people worship Guanyin as a deity and pray for the relief of suffering and to eliminate obstacles. This is superstition and misconception, because people forget the fact that the statues are expressions of concepts in the Dharma. The Buddhist architecture is also an artistic expression of the Dharma. The temple's main hall is similar to a large meeting or a teaching hall. Looking from the outside, it has two stories, but there is only one story inside. The outside two stories represent the absolute truth and relative truth in Buddhism. Inside, the single story illustrates that both are representations of the same truth. To the deluded, the two appear distinct and different. However, to the enlightened, they are one and the same. In the middle of the main hall, there are three statues, one Buddha and two Bodhisattvas. Buddha represents the nature of the universe and human life, which is called Buddha nature or true mind. Buddha is translated from Sanskrit and means someone who is totally enlightened. The Buddha statue represents the original enlightenment. The Bodhisattvas represent the application of the enlightened mind. The applications are unlimited and can be classified into two categories, wisdom and compassion. For example, the Pure Land tradition pays tribute to the Buddha and two Bodhisattvas of the Western Paradise. Buddha Amitabha represents the infinite enlightenment, which is the intrinsic part of our nature. Bodhisattva Guanyin and Mahasthamaprapta respectively portray compassion and wisdom. Our thoughts, views, and behavior should be rational rather than emotional, for emotional behavior spells trouble. Therefore, we should not treat the Buddha and Bodhisattvas as deities. But will they protect you? Yes, if you adhere to what they teach. As one learns the background artistries behind all the Buddhist architecture, music, and statues, one will gain an enriched and abundant experience by paying a visit to a traditional Buddhist temple. However, nowadays many people do not understand the meaning and teachings of Buddhism. They mistake the multi-representations of bodhisattvas as a sign of polytheism. What people fail to understand is the fact that the statues in Buddhism are Dharma teaching aids and not statues of deities. All Buddhas and bodhisattvas stand for our nature and cultivation of virtue. We have infinite capabilities within our true nature that cannot be expressed by just one single term. Therefore, we have representations, such as a capable person today may have many titles on his business cards to show his positions and accomplishments. The Buddha and Bodhisattvas actually are representations of ourselves. Buddha, as in our true nature of mind, and Bodhisattva, in our virtue of cultivation. We all possess these qualities. Not until people come to realize the meaning of Buddhist symbolism will they appreciate the sophistication and completeness of the Dharma education. Typical shi buildings are rare today. The first hall of a shi is the Hall of Kings of Heaven, also known as Dharma Protectors. Situated in the middle of the hall, facing the front door, is Maitreya Bodhisattva, who is represented by the image of the historical monk Bu Tai. Maitreya Bodhisattva has a big smile, which represents cheerfulness. He also has a huge belly, which represents fairness, flexibility, impartiality, patience, and tolerance. One must be non-discriminating, happy, smiling in welcoming others, and tolerant in order to study and practice Buddha's teachings. Standing beside Maitreya are four kings of heaven or Dharma protectors. Who do they protect? They protect us to remind us to educate ourselves and to safeguard what we learn. The Eastern Dharma Protector portrays responsibility and safeguards the territory, which means that we all are responsible for ourselves, our family, society, and the nation as a whole. If each one of us performs our duties well, then we will support each other and ourselves as well. The Southern Dharma Protector teaches us diligence and to improve ourselves continuously, or we will fall behind others. This is similar to Confucian ideas of daily self-improvement. The Western Dharma Protector portrays comprehensive vision. The Northern Dharma Protector, that of comprehensive learning. Both illustrate how to achieve the two elements mentioned above. As the ancient Chinese have said, to read 10,000 books and to travel 10,000 miles. We read to gain more knowledge and travel to observe more effectively. We will then be able to improve ourselves and to perform our duties most effectively. Today, people go to the Hall of Dharma Protectors to burn incense, prostrate, and offer flowers and fruit in order to pray for protection and safety. This is totally wrong. All the facilities and images of Buddha and Bodhisattvas and any offerings made are teaching tools designed to inspire our mind and wisdom and to remind us of the importance of being enlightened instead of deluded, virtuous instead of evil, and pure instead of corrupted. These are the three principles of Dharma teaching and practice. The ways in practicing Buddhism are numerous, 84,000 in total. Each path is different from the others but leads to the same goals, enlightenment, virtue, purity. Therefore, all paths are equal without one being superior to the other. People have different abilities, levels of accomplishment, are from different environments, and should choose a path most suited to themselves. We can choose any one of the three goals to concentrate our practice on. When we achieve one of the three, the other two will come naturally to us. There are 10 sects of Chinese Buddhism. Zen stresses the pursuit of perfect enlightenment to obtain the pure mind and Buddha nature. The Pure Land and Tibetan traditions stress their practices on obtaining the pure mind. Other sects emphasize virtue and practice on proper thoughts and concepts. Again, no matter which method or sect one practices, they all lead to the same outcome. In other words, once you are an expert in one method, you will become an expert in all methods. The purity of the world comes from the individual's inner purity. An enlightened being will have a virtuous and pure mind and will be void of deluded thoughts. By reciting Buddha's name, meditating, the reading of sutras or mantras, and strictly practicing in accordance with Buddha's teaching, one will attain enlightenment, virtue, and purity of mind. On the other hand, one is totally on the wrong path if one chants Buddha's name in the hopes of a promotion or wealth. That is religion and superstition, and it goes against the teaching of Buddha Shakyamuni. Buddhism is strictly the teaching of the Dharma. Buddha Shakyamuni was its founder. We call him the original teacher for the Dharma, just like the Chinese call Confucius the greatest sage and teacher. The relationship between Buddha and ourselves is a teacher-student relationship, which is not religious in nature. In religion, there is not a teacher-student relationship, but that of father, son, or master, servant. About 20 years ago, I gave a series of lectures in Fujian Catholic University and taught in the Thomas Monastery for one semester. I told my students there, who were mainly priests and nuns, to take refuge in the Buddha and to learn the Dharma well. There is absolutely no conflict between Buddhism and religions. for one is teacher-student, and the other father-son. If the priests and nuns were to practice Buddhism and in turn abandon their own religion, I believe that even Buddha would not accept them. It is against human ethics to discard the parent for the teacher. Therefore, all the followers of other religions would do well to learn Buddhism. After learning Buddhism, you will attain the wisdom to know exactly what heaven is like and will be able to decide when and how you want to go there. Thus, Buddhism is a way of teaching in that it teaches people how to regain their true wisdom. When a monk is called Hushan, he is equivalent to the principal in today's school, for he is the director of educational strategies. All other faculty members are teachers who are the role models for students' behavior and speech, and they execute the principal's educational strategies. My late teacher, Professor Fong, kept reassuring me that Buddhism is an education. Later, in my studies of the sutras, I reconfirmed his statement to be absolutely true that Buddhism is the pinnacle of the world's philosophies. It provides the greatest enjoyment for humankind. I have experienced the unsurpassed joy of tasting the Dharma bliss. I am free from afflictions, delusions, and wandering thoughts. My body and mind are clean and pure, totally at ease. I am the happiest person in the world. Therefore, I feel indebted to Professor Fong, for without him, I would not have learned Buddhism, nor had such complete happiness derived from practicing Buddha's teachings. Chapter 5. The Integration of Confucianism into Buddhism. Buddhism was successfully integrated into Chinese culture. They became inseparable. Confucianism and Buddhism advocate the enhancement and glorification of filial piety. Filial piety is a major element in accomplishing world peace. Therefore, the Chinese character, piety, embraces the spirit of Buddhism and the foundation of education. What is education? It is the meaning and the value of human life, the relationship between human beings, and the relationship between humans and the universe. Today, our education has lost that emphasis. Schools only teach skills which are superficial and not the root of education. When the root is rotten, it shakes the foundation of society and causes the chaos which we experience today. Elementary schools are like the root of education. Junior high, high school, and colleges are the flowers and leaves. Teachers should start teaching filial piety to our children as soon as possible. By looking at the way Chinese characters were created, we cannot but admire our ancestors' high level of wisdom. We thank them for having given us something that is so valuable and exquisite that no other culture in the world can compare. The Chinese word piety is formed by two characters, old and son. Nowadays, people talk about the generation gap between parents and children, which is something traditional families did not have. In the Chinese tradition, not only are father and son one unit, the father's father and his son's son are all part of the same continuum. This is a unique concept. Westerners often ask why Chinese people worship ancestors, since we hardly know them. The remembrance of our ancestors is the foundation of Confucianism and Buddhism, the source of harmony in society, and of peace in the world. Today, everyone wishes for world peace, but we need to start from the foundation of filial piety to obtain peace. Buddhism emphasizes unconditional compassion for all the sentient beings in the universe and beyond, in the past, present, and future. The continuum of time and space is inseparable from oneself. One does not find this extensive concept in religion. Thus, Come one of the 10 names for Buddha, stands for an enlightened being, which is part of our nature, and also the essence of the universe and human life. This concept is embodied by the Chinese character piety, and the name of Amitabha Buddha in the Pure Land tradition. The names may be different, but the meanings are the same. Unconditional love for all beings, which surpasses space and time.